Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
A public elected official, the governor of one of the 50 states, has been defending a practice that is morally repugnant. The governor of Virginia has been defending a practice that is repugnant to civilized people across the entire world. Here's just one of the ugly nuggets from Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia. Quote, "If the mother is in labor, the infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated, if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother." Let's be really clear about what we're talking about here. We're talking about fourth trimester abortion, or what anyone in the normal world calls infanticide.
That's Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse introducing the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act on the Senate floor Thursday. Well, it started in New York. People were shocked. It's like having the wind knocked out of you to hear the governor of New York talk about how infanticide essentially is necessary to preserve Roe v. Wade. But those who were watching Roe v. Wade for the last 46 years are hardly surprised. Then we have the Virginia governor taking it up a notch and actually describing how that infanticide would be carried out. What do we do about this abortion expansion legislation in New York, Virginia, and other states? What is the pro-life response? Joining us to answer some of those questions, Ramesh Panuru. He's senior editor for National Review, visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "The Infanticide Craze." Ramesh, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of the go-for-broke legislative strategy in both New York and Virginia?
And it's also advancing other places, Rhode Island, for one. I think it reflects a couple of things. One is the increasing extremism of the Democratic Party on the issue of abortion. Even as a matter of rhetoric, they no longer emphasize the idea that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as Bill Clinton did in the 1990s. They want it to be at any stage of pregnancy for any reason and ideally taxpayer funded. And then the other thing that it reflects is that supporters of this expansive abortion regime are worried that a newly conservative Supreme Court is going to scale back abortion rights, at least late in pregnancy, and so they want state laws to be in place in case the Supreme Court ever does that.
So they view this as kind of a prophylactic attempt based upon what they consider inevitable in the next 2 years, or near inevitable in the next 2 years of the Trump administration.
That's right. What they're doing is securing their sort of ill-gotten gains from the courts. The Supreme Court, it is widely misunderstood just how expansive our current abortion laws are, but the Supreme Court has essentially said that while you can regulate abortion in some ways, you can have waiting periods, you can have informed consent, you can forbid certain methods of abortion, you can't forbid abortion at any stage of pregnancy, even in the 8th and 9th month. It has to be available so long as the abortionist is willing to say that it's necessary for the pregnant woman's health, including her mental, emotional, psychological health. So you can't really have a ban. If the Supreme Court were to retreat from that, these laws will then kick into place and say that those abortions, even late in pregnancy, are still legal.
How do you think that individual legislators in these states who may have far more moderate views or mildly more moderate views on the issue of abortion go along with these extreme bills?
Well, sometimes they go along with them because they haven't looked at the details. So one Virginia state legislator said that she would not have co-sponsored this legislation had she been aware of all of its implications. That's a big part of it. Some of the language is misleading. I think a lot of people who look at the language where it suggests that late-term abortion is only going to be allowed for health reasons don't stop and ask themselves, well, what does that really mean? How can that be enforced? Is there a definition of health in here? And so, as has always been the case, abortion on demand has, to some extent, traveled under false pretenses.
Let's talk about some of those false pretenses when it comes to late-term abortion. Is the American public being rightly informed about, we're talking about, they're saying medical need, they're talking about the life of the mother, even up to and after a natural birth? Does that make any sense?
So the two claims that supporters of late-term abortion keep making are that it is extremely rare and that it's only done for very serious medical reasons. If the baby is severely deformed to the point of not being able to survive, or there's a threat to the mother's life. So to take those in order, the Alan Guttmacher Institute, a pro-abortion think tank, has estimated that 1.3% of all abortions take place after the 20th week. That's the best estimate we've got for late-term abortions, and that suggests that there are about 12,000 such abortions every year. Whether you consider that rare or not, I think depends to some degree on whether you think that these are real human lives. The fact is, that is more than the number of people who are killed in gun homicides every year, and we don't act as though gun homicides in our country are rare. On the circumstances question, again, our research is spotty on this question, but researchers have concluded that a majority of late-term abortions, that is, abortions after the 20th week, are not performed for medical reasons, but are typically performed for other reasons.
Did the Virginia legislation, you had mentioned earlier that it would have allowed, in essence, what most people would recognize as infanticide. Did it cross a line and set a standard for other states that are inclined to take this no-holds-barred approach to expansion of abortion?
Well, New York State had already legislated, unfortunately, the same basic policy of abortion on demand for any reason at any stage of pregnancy. Virginia, I think, was notable for the controversy that it led to, particularly because the sponsor was impolitic enough to give an honest answer to the question of whether somebody at the end of term, in the middle of labor, could have an abortion. And she said yes. That, I think, helped to sort of catalyze the issue and make it easier for people to see how extreme this was and sort of slice through all the euphemisms. But this is going to be an ongoing fight. It's a fight that's coming to a lot of states, I think.
Does this unwittingly highlight for people who may be in the mushy middle the absolute disconnect, the divorce between common sense, medicine, embryology, and what any OBGYN will tell you about the birth of a child, the disconnect between that and the agenda of those who want abortion on demand?
Absolutely. I think that there is a widening gap between these kind of abortion laws and the rest of the practice of medicine. For 20, 30 years now, we have had increasingly sophisticated sonograms where we have been able to look at the unborn child even early in pregnancy and see that they're not just a collection of cells or, you know, a mass of tissues or any of the other old pro-choice euphemisms for what is, in fact, a baby. We have made continual advances in the treatment of unborn children within the womb and of prematurely born infants, even very prematurely born infants. And at some point, I think a lot of people have noticed this, that there's something at odds between these doctors over here heroically working to save nascent human lives, and over here, abortion is trying to snuff that life out.
We're talking with Ramesh Panuru, senior editor for National Review, about abortion expansion legislation in New York, Virginia, and other states. When we come back, perhaps it's only anecdotal, but there are moderately pro-choice people, observers, who are horrified at what has now become legal in states like New York. We'll talk about that after this.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You could even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. PerformanceFitness618.com.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine with a brighter glow.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Oh, unborn child, if you only knew just what your mama was planning to do.
We're talking about abortion expansion legislation in New York and Virginia. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Ramesh Panuru of National Review is our guest. LCMS Life Ministry advocates for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable. Check out their free pro-life resources at lcms.org/life. lcms.org/life. Ramesh, this may be only anecdotal, but I have noticed some moderately pro-choice observers who are expressing horror at what is legal in states like New York.
What we need people to realize, I think, is that the Supreme Court has declared unborn children at any stage of development not to be persons, not to have any right to life. And so that is the law across this country. What's going on in places like Virginia and New York are just attempts to put that in statute, but they're already having that rule enforced by the courts. And I do hope that one of the things that comes out of this debate is that we have increasing understanding of just how extreme that is. Depending on which poll you look at, something like only 12 to 15% of the public believe that abortion should be available for any reason all throughout pregnancy. I mean, that's still too much as far as I'm concerned, but it's a very, very small minority of the population. There's a reason the pro-choice groups try to keep public attention away from this kind of question, because they know in a fair, open, democratic debate they would lose.
So what have we learned about the entrenched advocacy for abortion in the United States? What have we learned about them?
We've learned that it is extreme and that it tries to cover up its extremism through euphemism and deceit. I think those things have been clear to a lot of people who've been paying close attention to this debate, but moments like this, I think, help bring those truths to a broader public.
What should the pro-life response be to legislation like this as it advances through other states?
Well, I think that we have to be firm and unyielding and relentless in our opposition to this legislation. We need to be factual and draw out what this legislation really means and challenge every bit of spin that we see in the media. If they say, oh, this is only done in rare cases for severe abnormalities, we have to say, point me to the part of this law where you would restrict it to those cases. And they're not going to be able to do that because those aren't the kinds of laws they want. They don't want any kind of limitation.
Why do you think they have to take that particular all or none approach? Why wouldn't they say, look, what we really want is just a woman's right to choose up until 20 weeks. That's what we really want. That's what we'll be happy with. That would take it back to rare, legal, and safe, the old mantra. Why are they not satisfied with that?
I think a couple of reasons. Number one, it would be a retreat from what they got from the Supreme Court already. And number two, I think they're worried. Well, if you say it's okay to protect unborn children after 20 weeks, why not after 19 weeks? You know, what is the difference between a 19-week and a 20-week-old unborn child? They're worried about the underlying logic that militates for them in favor of abortion on demand and militates for other people in favor of protecting all human life.
What does this tell us about the possibility of a post-Roe situation in the United States? What should we learn from these recent legislative attempts about what it might look like?
So ending Roe v. Wade wouldn't end abortion. It would put it back into the hands of legislatures, and different legislatures are going to reach different conclusions. And in a lot of states, there are going to be some pretty heated debates, and they're debates that pro-lifers need to be ready for and that really all citizens need to be ready for in sense of being able to see through the spin and get the facts.
Realistically, how many states in a post-Roe America do you think would go the direction of New York, Virginia, and Rhode Island?
You know, it's a very important question. I do think that California, New York, Hawaii, maybe Rhode Island, there are a handful of states that I think we can expect to adopt extremely liberal laws, although, you know, we should fight as hard as we can for whatever protection for unborn children that we can get. There are other states that I think would go the other way, maybe 15 states that would have a pretty pro-life regime. And I think it's for the states in the middle, it's just going to be a real question, and it's going to depend on the political strength and the savvy, frankly, of both sides.
President Trump has been reinvited to give the State of the Union address soon. Should he mention this legislation in his State of the Union address?
I think it would be very beneficial both to the cause of life and to his political fortunes to note the extremism in defense of abortion that has unfortunately taken over much of the Democratic Party.
Ramesh Panuru is senior editor for National Review. He is visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and author of a recent column for National Review Online titled The Infanticide Craze. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ramesh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next week on Issues Etc., we'll study the Epiphany hymn, I Want to Walk as a Child of the Light, with Pastor Will Wheaton. We'll have Pastor Brian Wolfmiller introduce us to the book of Micah, and we'll discuss the idea and practice of a Christian university with Dr. Scott Ashman. This is what John Daniel Davidson has called the inescapable logic of abortion. once one has decided that there is no intrinsic value worth protecting in the unborn, there is no limiting principle, not time, not development, not anything, not even, as we have seen, the fact that that child is born. That is the inescapable and deadly logic of abortion. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.